ABC's Word Wizard, the Lord of Language, Professor Rolly Sussex with A Word in Your Ear.
Good evening, Rolly.
Good evening, Ashwin.
We've had a couple of pronunciation requests already, but any topic you talk about, people do bring up pronunciation. Why is it so important to people?
It used to be a terribly important marker of education, class, and where you came from. And particularly in the 19th century in England, people didn't want to appear provincial. And so the wealthy manufacturers in Manchester and Birmingham would hire young, lordly graduates of Oxford and Cambridge to come and live in their house and teach their children to speak proper. And, the thing you didn't want to sound like was someone from the back blocks. And I can remember when I was young, the ABC had a program called The Argonauts. And that was for kids. And they used to write in various things and you got points for your boat. And it was all terribly upper-class British English, you know. And I think as far as I know, the actors were Australian. But it was expected that these were the accents that you would hear from the ABC, particularly for news and current affairs.
What would happen if you threw in a glottal stop?
A glottal stop? I think you would probably have been taken off air at once. I don't know if they went on delay in those days, but the way you say things used to be very much a marker of belonging. And, I can hear my mother saying, don't talk to like that, dear. Don't behave like a gutter snipe. And a gutter snipe was one of these words in the 50s and so, which was a real put down. So I think that what we've done nowadays is, all this happened, by the way, the other day I was looking for the cricket on the TV, and I was channel flicking. And as I went along and failing to find the cricket, I heard American English and I heard Canadian English, various sorts of Australian, British and New Zealand. And it struck me that we are in a complete sea of accents. And most of the time we don't even react very much to it. If someone says, where did that last program you were watching, where did they come from? A lot of people won't, I didn't pay any attention to that. So we have become much more open, permissive, much less judgmental, which I think is important. That said, there are lots of things about the way we talk, and for some people, certain things are difficult, and it's interesting to work out why. And I have some wonderful examples.
Let's go through your list of examples and if there's anything we can do to get around to these these problems.
First thing is that not all languages have the same sounds. So if you happen to be a speaker of Finnish, for example, they don't distinguish between P and B or T and D. Now, the difference is that with the D and B ones, your voice is going. And if you want to check it, put your finger and thumb very lightly on either side of your voice box and say b-b-b-b-b-b-b-b-b and then p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p- Finnish. That is not part of the language, the way the language distinguishes words.
It's just muscle control.
Well, partly muscle control, but also cognitive.
Yeah.
And so Finns learning English have got to learn to make a distinction which isn't in their native language. And, you know, for them, pig and big sound very much like the same word.
There's a similar thing with the Indian languages, V and W.
Oh, yes.
They'll often say very good instead of very good.
Mm-hmm.
But they have an extra sound, like the spelling of Tamil, the language. They will spell it T-A-M-I-Z-H, and they'll pronounce it Tamir. Like the R sound.
Yes.
So, yeah, there's an extra sound, but they don't have the VW distinction.
That's right. And some of the languages, some of the sounds we have in English aren't, we can make the sounds, but they're not part of our language, like the clicks.
Yes.
Do you remember the Gods Must Be Crazy?
Yes.
Wonderful film. And the bloke there was clicking away like mad. There are languages in Southern Africa, and all the click languages are in Southern Africa, which I think have well over 40 or 50 distinct clicks. Now, there's a done with the tongue back in the mouth and out the side of the mouth and and very, very wonderful. There are some combinations of sounds which we can do in English, like at the start of a word, if you're going to have three consonants, the first one must be S, the second one must be PTK, and the third one can be L or R or Y or W. So spray and spew and scratch and so on. But this doesn't happen in Japanese because they cannot make consonant clusters. No, two consonants together, they pop a vowel in. So my name is Sussex, but in Japanese I am Sasekaso.
Yes.
Because the pop in a vowel, and the Christmas is Kurisumasu, because you can't say so Kurisumasu.
No. It's a very syllabic, consonant with a vowel.
Yes, yeah. Very much. Well, it's a vowel, very much consonant, vowel, consonant, vowel. In Maori, they have no S at all. They can make an S, and they do so when they're doing the haka, because an S is a sort of terrifying thing when you're doing the haka to make the other team scared. So
when
in Maori, Christmas is kirihimete. Kirihimete, using the sounds of Maori in place of the sounds which they don't have in Christmas.
Yes.
And these are part of the story. The other part for native speakers of English is tongue twisters. Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers is relatively straightforward, so long as you don't try and make the p very, very, very aspirated with a big puff of air. And by the way, there's a lovely aria in Mozart's Magic Flute about papageno. And if you go p, as you used to do in English, it just p, you can't. You've got to make something more like a B with just a little puff of air, papageno. It's like a machine gun. And then there's the sixth, sick, sheiks, sixth, sheeps, sick.
I'm glad I never got tested with that one at school.
If you make a pause and you fix your mind on the end of the last syllable of the upcoming word, you can sometimes do it. But that's one I cannot ever get, because the th and the sh. Now, th itself is a hard sound because your tongue is between your teeth. Th and the. Th and the. Right? Now, Icelandic has a th, and Castilian Spanish in the north has a th. I don't think any other European language does, except for Greek. Which, you know, it's part of ancient Greek as well. So it's a language which people from other countries tend to say, oh, this and that. This is a very difficult problem in French. I cannot do this.
Yes. Interesting. So the th is quite a rare sound. Is it because it's associated with lisps and things? So it's a dangerous syllable to have in your language?
I don't think so. I think it's just there are sounds which require you to make your articulators, you know, your tongue and your lips and so on, work a bit harder. And th is definitely one, because your tongue normally sits comfortably in the middle of your mouth. And if you've got to push it forward to be between your teeth, th, it's a little bit out of place.
Yes.
And you can see why it's a relatively unusual sound. The other one that English is difficult is the R, which is easy in Indian languages because it's called a retroflex R, and your tongue is curled up and back.
Karma, like they really roll their R's a lot.
Oh, yes, they can rail it. And you can do panda butter and things like that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
whereas in English, if you have library, you've got to get your tongue in place for the first R and then get it out of the way for the vowel and then back for the next one, library.
Yes.
And a lot of people just say library.
Okay.
Right, as if it were two syllables.
They just need to do some tongue training.
Well, you can. But, you know, at reasonable speed, even you and I would probably say, go into the library this afternoon.
Yeah.
And that's only two syllables. So, similarly, terrorism, too many R's. And, of course, poor old February is now as February. And the sounds have become different in order to make it more regularly pronounceable. So these are parts of things. Some of them are part of the language itself. And interestingly, by the way, the th sound is one of the last sounds that children learn. Now, if you're going to have trouble with the sounds of English, the TH sounds are going to be the problem ones.
You talked about consonant clusters as well, and the Japanese not having them. I feel like when I hear certain clusters of consonants in English, they go with certain meanings. So, for instance, you talked about glottal stop, stop, stationary, stay, stable, all things to do with not moving, still. Is there something where certain sounds like st, become associated with staying in a place?
Not really, because you've got strike as well, which is a very active sort of sound. This is the poetic value of sounds. L's and R's are often very, very smooth and light and so on.
Yes, lush.
And lush. And so people like words with L's and R's. And it's one of the ways in which I think we enjoy playing with language a bit.
Yeah.
But, of course, in French, your R, well, if you're singing in French on the opera stage and you're going to be doing classic. I'm a failed muso, by the way.
Okay, yes.
Until I broke my arm at school, I was a clarinetist. Much into classical music.
We've got Rhapsody in Blue with that famous clarinet at the start.
Oh, the glissando, yes. The one. Okay. But in French, you've got a which is made with your uvula. And the uvula is the little bit of skin that hangs down over the back of your mouth. And Edith Piaf in Rien de Rien, she can actually trill her uvula.
Wow.
I can do it a bit. Yeah. But the other trill, of course, which is found in, say, Italian, prego, right? And in Spanish, it's very, very important to make it right because one tap, pero, P-E-R-O means but perro with a trill means a dog.
Right. That's their equivalent of the tonal language. Just a slight shift creates a brand new meaning.
Ma, 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 and ma. Yes, yeah. I've been doing Chinese all day.
Right.
All right, so that's just a start. And there are then some cases, I think, where there are pairs of words where we're not really quite sure where the stress goes. Is it research or research? Cigarette or cigarette? Sometimes the difference is associated with you've been listening too much to the Americans. So they tend to say perfume, beret, baton, belay, because these are words which came from French in the last 200 years. French has a weak final stress on the last syllable. And so the Americans have kept that when they borrowed the words. We tend to normalize them. So, you know, it's the green beret, or at least it used to be, until the bridge on the River Kwai. When we all heard the beret pronunciation from Americans.
You brought up Maori earlier. On Austronesian language, like Taranaki, Rotorua, same as Malay, I lived there for a year, Upper Kaba, Tenga, Dangan. I don't feel there's stress in these Austronesian languages, but there's lots in English. Tell us about, do we need stress? What's the advantages and costs of having stress?
Okay, some languages do and some don't. And the ones that make it, I mean, English in some accents, is particularly upper-class English, where your stressed vowel is very audible, but everything else can get quite squashed out of the, you know, almost vanished. So I'm going to give it to the secretary in American English, four vowels that you can hear, secretary, right? Secretary, possibly two. And again, one of the things in learning a foreign language is if you take your stress pattern from your English and try and apply it to French, you sound dreadful. And so when you go from language to language, even from Australian English to American English has a much more even stress between stressed and unstressed syllables, which is why you have laboratory, secretary, mandatory, ceremony, and so on. Whereas the upper class British will say ceremony. No, going to the laboratory this afternoon.
So us English speakers in general, unless we're upper class, need to be careful of our stress prejudice when we enter other languages.
Yes, listen very carefully because it's one of the things which, on the whole, we're not taught. And yet, if you've got a musical ear, you can probably detect it quite well. And you'll find, for example, that in Italian and in Polish, you've got a stress which is on the second to last syllable. So it feels like spaghetti, all the time.
Yeah.
In Hungarian and in Icelandic and in Czech and Slovak and various other languages, stress is always on the first syllable, which is very easy. In English, it moves all over the place. And when it does, it can change the pattern of the vowels as well. So stress on the first syllable, photo. Stress on the second one, photography. Photography, not photography, but photography. Stress on the third syllable, photographic, all right? And so as the stress moves, it actually enhances or reduces the quality of the vowel and can leave you sounding very strange.
I've got a couple of questions for you, Rolly.
Go.
As we go. Hi, guys. For Rolly, on the pronunciation thing, very nautical, and I might need your help with this, but gun whale or gun whale?
Oh, gunnel, yes.
Gunnel pronounced gun all. Forecastle pronounced...
Foc'sle,
yes. Mm. You may need to say them quickly. There's many more. Like most nautical language, kind of odd, and you have to be part of the gang to understand. That's from Dean.
You do. And the foc'sle is one of the few words in English that's got two apostrophes because it was originally forecastle. No, at the bow and the stern of the ship, there was this thing which looked like a little castle. And so it was the foc'sle, which was the forecastle, the one at the front of the ship. And they didn't have a particular name, as far as I know, for the one at the stern of the ship. But no, the pronouncing special words properly is part of the way you show belonging to the crowd or not belonging. And not belonging can make you look very, very exposed, I'm afraid.
Can be painful to not belong. Hi, Ashwin and Rowley. It's Cheryl from Yorkeys Knob. My parents are Polish. My dad's name in Polish is Zdzislaw. How would you say that?
Zdzisław. Because the Z dead is quite possible in Polish, and then the Z with an I after it is Z and not anything else. So Zdzisław.
Yeah, she says everyone called him Peter.
Look, it happened with Kościuszko, with the name, the mountain, right? I had a big fight with lots of people, and we kept on, and we finally got the Z into it. Kościuszko is the name of a very famous Polish patriot. And we've got the Z into it. People now write the Z. They don't write the accent on the first S because it's a sh, Kościuszko. But Zdzisław is a... The Poles are very good at putting consonants together. And a friend of mine once said that learning Polish... My wife was Polish, so I learned the language.
Yeah.
Speaking Polish is like filling your mouth with razor blades.
It's a tough challenge for the European languages especially. I've heard it's right up there as well. Where should we round up with the pronunciation discussion, Robert?
Oh, straight out errors. President Bush, the second President Bush, said nuclear, not nuclear.
Mm. Okay.
And in fact, one of the journos present asked him a question about nuclear, and he said, yes, you should be saying nuclear. And she said, yes, Mr. President, I'm asking about the nuclear threat. No, nuclear. Now, there are words like cochlear and so on, but there are which are go clear. But in fact, nuclear is in a... It's following a pattern that other words do, but it, the clear one, there are only two that go clear, cochlear and nuclear, and you've got to remember. Other than that, mischievous and grievous, both of them dreadful mistakes. But this is an interesting one because there are, in English, according to the Oxford Dictionary, 5,700 words in OUS. It's an awful lot, but only 1,100 in IOUS. So people who are who say mischievous and grievous, in fact, they know that there's a pretty well-peopled group of words in IOUS and so on, but they've chosen the wrong ones, I'm afraid. And so mischievous and grievous will mark you as being not speaking the standard, and people will get cross. Vulnerable and Arctic and million and Australian, these are more examples of phonetic difficulties. If you've got two consonants together, Arctic, kut, kut, right? If you're really struggling, just leave out the first one, so Arctic.
People often say, can't we just pronounce things however we like? Surely it's class or it's accent. I don't know. What is the difference between a pronunciation issue and an accent issue when it comes to mispronouncing something?
Mm. Pronunciation, I think, covers any, you know, correct, marginal, and wrong things. Accents are established as the way in which people speak in a group. Sometimes it's where they come from. Sometimes it's how old they are. You know, children. You can have a childish accent or, you know, an old person's one. Sometimes you can have varieties of sounds like, I'm going down the pub this afternoon to see me mates, high-rising tone in the middle. And that for a long time was found only in teenage females. And then it gradually spread out. So did creaky voice, stone the crows, which has started in America and has now become copied by vast numbers. In some parts of America, 85% of young females are doing it.
The vocal fry. It annoys a lot of people at the moment.
Oh, yes. Not you and not I and not Margaret Thatcher,
no,
who had one of the most un-vocal fry-ish voices I've ever heard, I think.
Bring us home, Rowley.
Well, I've got a last word. There are three rules. This is Somerset Maugham, the novelist. Three rules for writing a novel. Unfortunately, no one knows what they are.
Rowley Sussex, thank you as always for coming.
Pleasure.
The ABC's Word Wizard. The Lord of Language. Professor Rowley Sussex with A Word in Your Ear.